The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, looking forward to the weekend. We're already almost at the end of our working week, and there seem to be storm clouds on the horizon in the ever-expanding relationship that Israel is having with the United Arab Emirates. Mm-hmm. And the issue on the horizon involves security for Israeli flights. We understand that the Shin Bet has stepped in to say that there are some issues with security arrangements for Israeli companies flying particularly to Dubai.
Right.
And that they were due to actually have halted flights during the course of next week because of these deficiencies that they've identified in security arrangements. And this would cover all Israeli flights, El Al, Arkia, Israel, all Israeli companies that are currently flying to Dubai would be affected by this. And the fear is that if the Israeli companies don't fly to Dubai, then the reciprocal arrangement with the Emirati airlines that fly to Israel would also be rescinded, because they would feel that they've been discriminated against on the Emirati side, and they might well cancel flights as well. So this is very much a storm cloud on the horizon. We hope that the Shin Bet can somehow resolve some of the security deficiencies that I've identified in Dubai. It doesn't prevent continued flights to locations like Abu Dhabi and other areas within the Emirates, but Dubai, of course, is one of the key destinations, and that would be taken off the agenda. So let's hope that somehow this can be resolved pretty quickly, because there is a very steady flow of people backwards and forwards between Israel and the Emirates at the moment. So that would all be halted potentially if these flights were cancelled. Let's hope that that will be resolved.
Do we have any specifics about what the security issues might be?
So the Shin Bet are very, very cautious to publish information at all about security arrangements. And I'm not even sure if it would involve passengers necessarily, because the security arrangements are so extensive. They cover crew members and they cover the aircraft themselves when they're on the ground at the airport. So it's not clear to me, and it hasn't been published anywhere, what the security problems are. Nobody's trying to have a guess as to what they might be, but apparently they're serious enough to stop the flights going there. So, as I say, let's hope that that'll be resolved.
Indeed. The government yesterday announced a $1.3 billion to reduce the cost of living.
Yeah, so this is a plan that the government has produced in response to massively increasing prices all over the place in the Israeli economy. Let's begin with the petrol price, and let's continue with the cost of electricity and the cost of consumer goods, all of which seem to have increased quite dramatically over the past few months. We already spoke about the fact that Tel Aviv has been propelled into first position as being the most expensive city in the world. And the salary levels, unfortunately, are not commensurate with that situation. So the average Israeli family is really, really struggling at the moment to make ends meet, even more so than was the case before. There have also been reports that the average salary has actually reduced in Israel over the recent times. We're seeing all this inflationary pressure. We also know that there is possibility that prices may well increase a lot in the near future, because we know that the government has already stepped in and convinced consumer goods companies to at least halt certain price increases for now. Some of them reported that they cancelled their recently announced price increases. Some of them have said they've put them on ice, and those could potentially break out in the future. So yesterday there was a press conference. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett was in the center of the three ministers who were presented. The other two were our finance minister, Avigdor Lieberman, and our economy and industry minister, Orna Barbivai. The three of them presented this $1.4 billion, probably US dollar plan to try to address the rising cost of living. It will involve lowering taxes for working families. It will involve an attempt to decrease the prices of energy and of food staples by reducing import duties on certain items, and also to try to convince companies to not increase the prices, some of the price increases that are slated for later in the year. Also a plan to reduce state provided electricity to certain people. The problem with this is, of course, making sure that this help gets to the right place. Inevitably, the help is offered people who don't necessarily need to take up on it. Mm-hmm. Very frequently, the people who really do need it are the ones who have to fight tooth and nail and produce all kinds of, go through all kinds of blue tape in order to, and red tape in order to produce the documents that they need in order to justify their situations. Because the moment you're starting to talk about implementing advantages to certain sectors of the population, inevitably it involves people having to prove that they fall into the category of people who need the help, and that's oftentimes very difficult for people to prove. So it is my hope that this help will come to the people who really need it. And, you know, I welcome the government's attempts to address this issue and not just to allow it to go unnoticed. But I just wonder how it's going to actually work. There is also talk about giving benefit to childcare subsidies. So obviously addressing families with young children. Unfortunately, in Israel, we're seeing an increased divide between the people who are in the higher income earning brackets and the people who are in the lower income earning brackets. The higher brackets are traditionally people who work in high tech. I recently saw an article which suggested that a couple who work in high tech could easily earn 50,000 shekels a month, where the average salary in Israel is less than 10,000 shekels and going down, apparently. A couple earning 50,000 shekels are obviously doing very well. And they are in turn also pushing the prices of property up because they are able to afford to pay more. And many of these high-tech exits that we talk about, where companies are sold either to other Israeli companies or to companies abroad, and some of that profit is distributed amongst employees at the company, or even if companies are not sold, just during regular fundraising rounds, very frequently employees are given the opportunity to exercise options and they take home money, and that money then goes to buying an apartment, very often an expensive apartment, or very often pushing up the price of a slightly cheaper apartment. And the cost of property in Israel is just really, really astronomical, and there is no sign that it will be tempered anytime soon. It's just on the way up and the other way up. So this help is very welcome, and let's hope that it'll get to the right people.
Absolutely. A Jerusalem bus driver was lightly injured in a shooting incident yesterday.
Yeah, so this actually happened last night. And the moment we hear about a shooting incident, of course, we think about a terror attack. The police, interestingly, left almost until the very last statement that they made, the fact that they think it is criminally motivated rather than a terror attack. But there was a full-scale operation to deal with this incident yesterday. Apparently, the shooting was from an air rifle. And initially, passengers on the bus didn't really know what had happened. Some of them thought that stones had been thrown towards the bus. However, it was later confirmed that this was a shooting incident, that a 40-year-old bus driver was lightly injured by the shots from this air rifle that were targeted the number 59 bus in Jerusalem. A full-scale police investigation was launched. A helicopter was launched immediately to try to track down the offender and to try to catch him. Unfortunately, the person who was involved in that offense, the person who committed the offense, is still unaccounted for in spite of the police's best efforts to try to apprehend him. So the culprit is still on the run. The bus driver has been treated in hospital for his light injuries. Fortunately, there was no further implications in terms of the lack of safety to those people who were traveling on the bus. But there were some people who were very shocked by the incident. So fortunately, this time around, it seems like it wasn't a terror incident, but it was kind of handled almost like a terror incident, almost like the way that a terror incident would be handled. And unfortunately, the authorities in Jerusalem are far too accustomed and well-trained in responding to incidents like this because of course, the fact that they've had to respond to so many terror incidents before, that it was really treated in the same way. Luckily, everything seems to have been resolved, and the police are still working to try to apprehend the culprit who was involved in that.
Yeah, it's actually quite sad that the presumption is that it's a terror attack, nothing else. In another part of the world, the presumption would be something completely different.
True. Unfortunately, you know, that is the reality of our situation. Mm. And the moment something like this happens, it is presumed to be a terror attack.
Israel is set to legalize the recreational use of cannabis. They might as well do it because it's pretty much happening anyway.
Well, I mean, there's so many different layers to this particular matter. Let's start with the fact that medical cannabis, the use of medical cannabis, the production of medical cannabis, the industry of medical cannabis is massive in Israel. People are growing it, they're selling it, and it's all in you know, under the label of medical cannabis, and that all seems to be working pretty well and the source of significant foreign income for Israel, because Israel has turned out to be one of the world's major suppliers of medical cannabis. So the cannabis industry is alive and well and growing in Israel. And even people like former Prime Minister Ehud Barak is very involved in a medical cannabis company, and that seems to be doing pretty well. On the other hand, where recreational cannabis use is concerned, it is currently illegal and even criminal. So if somebody is caught, with some cannabis, and then they are subject to a first offense fine of 1,000 shekels. And if they're caught again, then they're subject to a fine of 2,000 shekels. And if they're caught a third time, then they need to enter into some sort of an arrangement. And on the fourth occasion, they may well even be indicted for a criminal charge for the use of cannabis. Now, when they say legalize the use of cannabis, I think the words that are being used are a little better than the reality that's being proposed, because what they're saying is that they're going to decriminalize rather than legalize it. So instead of it becoming a criminal offense to use, to possess cannabis for recreational use, they're just going to make it an administrative offense. Okay, so it's not really legalizing it as such, but it's being compared like to a traffic fine. It's an administrative fine. Now, speeding is not legal. Okay, so you can't say, well, they've legalized speeding, because the only fine that you get is an administrative fine.
So maybe they've decriminalized it.
So they've I think the proposal by Justice Minister Gideon Saar is to decriminalize rather than to legalize, as the headlines are pointing out to. And so what he's saying is that it would be subject still to a 1,000 shekel fine if somebody is caught possessing cannabis, but that 1,000 shekels would apply on each and every occasion, and there wouldn't be any sort of ramping up of the situation. If you caught second and third time, it wouldn't accumulate on your record, and it would be considered to be not a legal offense, but a so-called administrative offense. But I think in the end that they're going to have to find a happy medium to allow people to use cannabis freely within the, you know, the confines of their own home or whatever it is. And we have a huge battle with this issue of cannabis, don't we? Wherever we go, we find that there is so much dilemma over whether cannabis should be legal or whether it should not be legal. Is it really worse than cigarettes, or is it just as bad as cigarettes? Now, cigarettes are kind of legal, but you pay so much because the tax on them is so high that they're trying to discourage people from using them, rather than to say it's an administrative offense or it's a criminal offense to use it. But I don't really see the big difference between cannabis and cigarettes. They're addictive. In all cases, I mean, we know that already. Cannabis has its advantages because it's being used for medical purposes. I don't know why we don't just get over all of this and allow people to get on with their lives without creating criminals out of people who are really not criminals, but just, you know, wanting to use something recreationally, which probably wouldn't hurt anybody, and it's just all about their own free choice.
Yeah, I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 0618951019. I guess the argument could be raised that if you have used cannabis, are you safe to drive? Are you, can you behave responsibly? If you're a doctor, should you be allowed to treat patients? In that way, it is different to cigarettes in that it does impact and alter your state of mind.
But potentially similar to alcohol, though.
Absolutely, you know, right.
Let's throw alcohol into this particular discussion.
Same as their laws.
Not an offence.
Yeah, right. Same as their laws around driving after you've drunk. So there should be simply laws around not driving operating machinery. If you have doctors know that if they are going to be treating patients, they certainly cannot consume alcohol. It should be done very much in the same way. Manage it rather than just criminalise it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always, wishing you a fantastic weekend and Shabbat Shalom, and we will speak to you on Monday morning at 7:45.